Hi, this is Aaron Eby, and I am re-recording a lecture that I gave at Beth Emanuel on July 28th, 2018, on Parshat Va'etchanan. And full disclosure, I put this together very quickly and found a lot of help from a particular website that provided a lot of the references and kind of some of the ideas for the outline. So I'm going to link that in along with the recording on the website. But I'd like to talk to you today about really the purpose of life, big things. In Deuteronomy 4:9, in this week's Parsha, it says, "Only take care and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, unless they depart from your heart all the days of your life." Keeping your soul, keeping your life is what it's talking about there. In Hebrew, it says, "Rak hishamer lecha." So only take care, protect. "Ushmor nafshecha me'od," and protect your soul greatly. So it's repeating this word, shemor. And probably based on this verse or inspired by this verse, the great sage Hillel the Elder in Pirkei Avot, chapter 1, Mishnah 13, he says, "Spread a name, lose his name. And one who does not increase knowledge ceases. And one who does not study is liable to die. And one who makes use of the crown of learning passes away." Now, Hillel the Elder is one of my favorite sages because he is so much like our master in the types of things that he taught. Even the manner of how his words come out is very similar to Yeshua's. And he's known for being very gentle, being very kind, being very lenient, and focusing on compassion, not like Shammai, who's very strict and harsh and stern. So it's really surprising to hear Hillel say something so harsh. He says, "One who does not study is liable to die." Why would Hillel, the lenient guy, the gentle guy, say that if you don't study, then you are worthy of death? Here's another passage from Pirkei Avot, chapter 1, Mishnah 2, that kind of elucidates this a little bit. It says that Shimon the righteous was from the remnants of the great assembly, and he would say, "On three things the world stands: on the Torah, on the service, and on acts of loving kindness." Now, what does he mean when he says that the world stands on those things? Does he mean that those things are like the legs of a table, and those things enable the real business to happen on top of the table, but they're there to support it? No, that's not what he's saying. He's saying that these are the things, these are the reasons that the earth exists. This is, God looked into the world and he said, "This is what I want my world to be based on. It's the basis. It's our reason for having this world." Those three things, the Torah, the service, and loving kindness, acts of loving kindness. And it kind of goes along with what Ecclesiastes says right at the end of the book of Ecclesiastes. It says, "The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil." We don't like to end with that word evil, so we always repeat the previous verse. It says, "The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man." Now in Hebrew, the word duty doesn't even appear there. It says, "For this is the whole," or the entirety, "of man. Fear God and keep his commandments." That's it? That's all we exist for? If that's so, then we can kind of understand why Hillel is so harsh. Torah is the point to life. This is the reason that we were created, the reason you were created. God created you and said, "I want someone to keep the Torah." And so he made you. So this is our purpose for entering this world, to experience God, to know him, to experience his goodness through studying the Torah, through fulfilling the commandments of the Torah. And that helps us to understand some other harsh things that our master said. Yeshua also, he's of course a very loving, very gentle, very very compassionate a man. But in Matthew 18, he says something very harsh. It says in verse 5, "Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me, but whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea." Wow, that's real harsh. You know, it almost sounds even more harsh than what Hillel said. But it makes sense if you think about it. By causing someone who's early on in their journey, like this child, to sin, you've really taken away their purpose in life, because the purpose of life is to fear God and keep His commandments. So it's almost worse than ending their life. You're taking away their whole purpose for living. He goes on and he says, "Woe to the world for temptations to sin, for it's necessary that temptations come, but woe to the one by whom the temptation comes." If you think about what he says, it makes sense. I mean, temptations are necessary because they're what provide free will. Free will is what makes our deeds in this world valuable. So if we didn't have temptations, if we didn't have a difficulty in making choices, things blocking us from doing the right thing, then we wouldn't really have the ability to choose God. It would be chosen for us, and we wouldn't have free will. But about you, you don't want to be that temptation. You must avoid at all cost being the agent of someone else's temptation. Our master continues and he says, "If your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It's better for you to enter life crippled or lame than with two hands or two feet to be thrown into the eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away, for it's better for you to enter life with one eye than with two eyes to be thrown into the hell of fire." Now, that's really harsh, but his point is that the point of this world and the whole point of you having a body, the reason that you have feet and hands and eyes, is to do mitzvot. The reason you have hands is to give to other people. The reason you have feet is to run to do the mitzvot. The reason you have eyes is to study the Torah. And if those body parts fail to do mitzvot, then they're serving no purpose, no beneficial purpose whatsoever. And if they're committing sins, God forbid, then they're actively destroying your reason for living. And that's why our master is so harsh about that. Another passage from Pirkei Avot is also interesting to compare. In chapter 4, Mishnah 16 and 17, Rabbi Yaakov says, "This world is like an entryway before the world to come. Fix yourself in the entryway so you may enter the throne room." He says, "1 hour of repentance and good deeds in this world is better than all the time in the world to come, and 1 hour of pleasure in the world to come is better than all the time in this world." Now you might be wondering, why? Wait, 1 hour of repentance and good deeds in this world is better than all the time in the world to come? What is he saying? Well, it's this world is the world where you have that ability to exercise your free will. And that's really what you will be doing, what we're doing in this world. This is the point of this world. In the world to come, you won't have the ability to repent because your choices will already be made. And this really helps us to understand the purpose of this world. Is to keep the commandments, to choose God every moment of our lives, to help our souls achieve their purpose, doing what's right in this world, and then by doing what's right in this world, and ending up with reward in the world to come, treasures in heaven. So really, there's no room in this worldview for religion on the side. You really can't have a compartmentalized life in Judaism, especially in Messianic Judaism. I mean, Yeshua teaches that being a tzaddik is not a special calling. I mean, you might be thinking, "Well, that's for tzaddikim. That's for the very righteous people, the very spiritual, holy people that keep the world running spiritually. And I'm just one of the simple folk that just has a normal life." But you know, that's not how it works. Yeshua teaches that being a tzaddik is not a special calling. It's the calling of every person. And this is one of the misconceptions he came to correct, because if our goal is to just continue to exist the way things are and to keep the status quo, then fine. But that's not our goal. We're seeking the kingdom of heaven. We're seeking the complete redemption. And the world as it is right now is not, it's not without us rising to the level that God has for us. We're not going to achieve that. So everyone is called to be a tzaddik. That means you. So everything we do really ought to be for the sake of heaven. So whatever we're doing, whenever you spend money, whenever you eat something, whatever you decide to do, really should be a spiritual question. Now, does that mean that we're not seeking our personal needs, that we abuse ourselves, our physical bodies for the sake of the kingdom. We don't get jobs. We all have to go into some kind of ministry, become rabbis, and study Torah all day. We don't eat or drink or sleep or raise a family. No, that's not what I'm saying. But the concept is well understood in Judaism. Here's a passage from a code of Jewish law, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, in chapter 31. It says, "Our rabbis of blessed memory said, upon which short verse are all the principles of the Torah predicated?" It's the verse in Proverbs. It says, "In all your ways, acknowledge him." In all your ways, acknowledge him. It means that even in those things that you do for your personal needs, you should acknowledge God and do those things for the sake of his name, blessed is he. For example, eating, drinking, walking, sitting, lying down, getting up, marital intimacy and talking. All these physical needs should be done for the sake of serving your creator or for the sake of doing something that will be conducive to the service of him. And it goes on and says, how can you serve God by eating and drinking? Well, needless to say that you may not eat or drink things that are forbidden, God forbid, but even regarding foods that are permitted, if you're hungry and thirsty and you eat and drink just to satisfy your desires, that's not a praiseworthy attitude. But you should have in mind that you are eating and drinking to have strength to serve the Creator. Therefore, you should not eat all that appeals to your palate, like a dog or donkey, but you should only eat things that are helpful and beneficial to the health of your body. There are some very devout people who say before partaking of food, I'm about to eat and drink in order to be healthy and strong to serve the Creator, blessed is his name. And that was all a passage from the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Can you imagine that, his last suggestion there? If before you take any food or before eat anything, you would say, I'm about to eat and drink in order to be healthy and strong to serve the Creator, blessed is his name. I'm about to eat this Milky Way bar in order to be healthy and strong. It would really change the way that you eat if you did that. If you really think about eating as being for the sake of the kingdom of heaven, and everything you eat is because you want to turn into mitzvot, that you're not eating anything just because it tastes good, but you're eating it because it's going to help you serve God in this world. Well, that's going to change your attitude toward food. And this passage goes on, and it talks about what does it look like to drink or to walk or to sit, lie down, get up, marital intimacy and talking. What do those things look like if you're really doing those things for the sake of heaven? And of course, we're not talking about the things that are forbidden, of course. But even when you're talking about things that are permitted, even within that realm, we have to be focusing on why we're doing those things. And in that mindfulness will affect the way that we behave. And that really just goes to show that why do we even have a body in the first place? Because it's the instrument, it's a tool that our soul has to accomplish its mission in this world. I had a friend when I was a little kid. She was a happy, healthy, beautiful Christian girl, and she wanted to die. Not because she was unhappy, not because she had anything wrong, but because she looked forward to heaven so much. People told her about how wonderful heaven is, and she just wanted to be done with this life and move on to the other world. And I guess that makes sense, and that's beautiful in its own way, but it just speaks to the missing piece of why we have a body, why we have this world. Why not just go into the world to come? Why not just go into the Messianic age? There's a reason why we're here and we have our physical bodies. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, starting in verse 1, "For we know that if the tent that is our earthly home is destroyed," so he's saying if our mortal body dies, "we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens." There he's talking about our resurrection body. "For in this tent we groan, longing to put on our heavenly dwelling, if indeed by putting it on we may not be found naked." In other words, we don't want to necessarily be a disembodied soul floating around, but to be clothed in the body of the resurrection. So he goes on and says, "For while we are still in this tent, we groan, being burdened, not that we would be unclothed, but that we would be further clothed, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life." So Paul is saying that a body is necessary, whether it's our physical body or our resurrection body. But what's so important about our body? In verse 9, he starts and then says, "So whether we are at home or away, we make it our aim to please him, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Messiah, so that each one may receive what is his due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil." Now, if it wasn't Paul that said that, I would accuse him of legalism, but he says it's Paul, so what are you going to say? He says that we live in this body so that each one may receive what is his due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil. This is why we have a body, to do what we're supposed to do. This is what so that our soul can enter this physical world and to accomplish its tasks. You know, we tend to think of angels as being these trans-dimensional beings, and we maybe are a little jealous of how they are not so restricted by space and time. But when you think about it, that's completely backward. Humans are the ones that are trans-dimensional beings, if you think about it, not the angels, because we are spiritual beings, but we're clothed in a physical body that enables us to take the physical matter of this world and transform it into something spiritual. And that's something an angel can't do. They probably look at us and are jealous of us. But we have a body. It's an amazing thing. It's our soul's tool. It's our soul's instrument to fulfill its job and to complete its role and its charge in this world. Without our physical body, how would we keep the Torah? How would we carry out the Torah? The Torah is completely a physical thing. It talks about all kinds of different things that we have to do here and in this world and in the realm of space and time. So we have a body. What do we do with that body? Why? What's our responsibility? Well, we need to take care of it. In order to exist in this body, we have to give it the body what it needs. We have to feed it. We have to give it drink. We have to give it sleep. We have to give it shelter. We have to give it everything that it needs. Our soul is like an astronaut in a space suit. You know, space suits are really cool. They look really cool, but the point of being an astronaut is not to wear a spacesuit. In fact, it's a spacesuit that enables the astronaut to do his real job or her real job. It's just there to allow the astronaut to go where no man has gone before, to accomplish his or her mission in space. I mean, does the astronaut care what happens to the spacesuit? Heck yes. He would be or she would be just utterly taking care of that spacesuit to protect it from being harmed or from wearing out, because without that spacesuit, the mission would fail in the worst way. So an astronaut maintains the spacesuit and takes good care of it. So, well, what about enjoying the world? Can we enjoy things? Can we have speaking of space, can we have a Milky Way bar once in a while? Well, yes, it has a legitimate place. When the enjoyment serves us in this process of transforming the physical and making it elevated to something spiritual. So like the Didache says, you gave nourishment and drink for humans to enjoy in order that they would give thanks to you. So if you eat something that's enjoyable, just make sure that you are doing so in order to give thanks to God, and you're doing it within the proper limits. Because if that enjoyment goes outside of proper limits, proper boundaries of moderation, it starts to impede on our other responsibilities. And it can create health problems. It can cause habits, bad habits to form. It can disrupt our schedules. It can take time away from things that are important, like studying. It can take money away that could be better spent elsewhere. All those things, it can cause damage to you spiritually. It can cause damage to your body, and then you've got all these health costs and things that are related to that. And are you really going to be able to fulfill your calling serving God if you're not in top physical shape? if you're not fit, and if you're not healthy. You know, people often, when they come to an understanding of Torah, they enjoy the Torah's freedom. That enjoyment is not sinful. That we are to enjoy this life. There are things that you can enjoy in this life. It's holy, in fact, to enjoy things in this life. But you know, that seeing the doors flung open like that can lead people to a different kind of extreme, where one's physical inclination is left unchecked under this guise that, well, the Torah permits it. It's okay, because there's no commandment in the Torah that says you can't do that. But you realize that you can keep every commandment in the Torah and still not be fulfilling your ultimate calling. The Rabbi Ramban, the Ramban, Nachmanides, is known for describing a state where someone is corrupt with the permission of Torah, reprobate with the permission of Torah. Naval b'yishut haTorah, he says. So this is somebody who you can't point to a verse that they necessarily violated, but they are not living up to their ideals. They're a reprobate. So how do we avoid that? So how can we both enjoy this world and also not go beyond our limits? Well, one thing that we can do is follow actually the advice of Shammai, where when he found something really enjoyable, he would save it for Shabbat. Let Shabbat be, you know, this to delight in Shabbat is a mitzvah. So you can get double points. You find a really great fish, save it for Shabbat, and then that's when you eat it. And then you both get the to enjoy it, give thanks for the food that you enjoyed, and you get to delight in that holy day. So our mission, see, this is the thing, our soul's purpose is to take control, is to conquer our flesh, to direct the flesh, to guide it to fulfilling its correct purpose, to doing what it's supposed to be doing. So if your flesh is going unchecked, then your soul is not fulfilling its purpose, and it's not in charge. So there is a commandment in the Torah to protect your body. It makes sense. I just read it for you in the beginning, or in this week's Parsha, in Parshat Va'etchanan, it says, Deuteronomy 4:9, take care and keep your soul diligently, because we want the body to be the right instrument that allows us to protect or to keep the commandments. So we have to protect our bodies. Not only that, it's such an important thing. This is really foundational, that there's a connection between, in this verse, between the taking care of your body and standing at Mount Sinai. If you continue with the verse, it says, only take care, keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, unless they depart from your heart all the days of your life. Make them known to your children and your children's children, how on the day that you stood before the Lord your God at Horeb, which is Sinai. So you can look at, for example, the classic commentator Kli Yakar, when it says, guard yourself, take care, it means taking care of the body. So it's a mitzvah. And if you think about it, it's a big mitzvah. I mean, look at what our master say was the greatest commandment. Again, it's from this week's Parsha. It says, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. Okay, with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. That's pretty much everything. Everything you have should be devoted to God. You know, your heart, and that's referring to your mind. That's your decision making, your free will, your decisions of how your mind is in control of your decisions. So you direct it toward the thoughts of heaven and the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Your soul, in Hebrew, it's your nefesh, really probably better understood as your life, what keeps you alive, and would probably be even better understood as body than soul. And when it says your might, it refers to your wealth, what you spend your money on, everything that you have, all your property. So our master teaches that all these things belong to God. They don't belong to you. They're just entrusted to you for a time. So your body is something that God is asking you to take care of and use it properly. Bodily health is really necessary. It's a foundational thing for keeping the commandments. Because the commandments are by nature physical. And so that's that. So you, if you, you can't keep the commandments without the body being healthy, which means that keeping the body healthy is a foundational commandment in the Torah. If you're, if you have an unhealthy body, you're not going to fulfill the commandments correctly. In fact, it's, if you, you look in the Halakha, you look in Rambam in Mishnei Torah and Hilchot Deot, chapter 4, he says, keeping the body healthy and well is a part of the path of God. After all, it's impossible to comprehend or attain the knowledge of God while you are sick. Thus, a person is required to avoid anything that is destructive to the body and to acquire healthful and life-imparting habits. So it's a halakhic necessity to be healthy, to do healthful things. Here's what the Ramchal says, also a genius and a brilliant light in the Jewish world. The Ramchal in Derech Hashem said, man's use of the world for his own needs should be circumscribed by the limits imposed by God's will. It should not include anything forbidden by God. Of course, we know that, right? We don't eat non-kosher food, for example. And he goes on and says, it should be motivated by the need to best maintain his health and preserve his life, and not merely to satisfy his physical urges and superfluous desires. That's what we got out of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch as well. One's motivation in maintaining his body should furthermore be so that the soul should be able to use it to serve its creator without being hampered by the body's weakness and incapability. When man makes use of the world in this manner, this itself becomes an act of perfection, and one can attain it, can attain the same virtue as in keeping the other commandments. In other words, the pursuit of health as a means to an end of keeping the commandments better, serving God, is an act of worship. It is an act of obedience. And so so he's using that term perfection similarly to the way that the Didache and our Master Yeshua use it when he says, you shall be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. So it's an act of worship. And the Ramchal continues, he says, indeed, one of the commandments requires that we keep our bodies fit so that we can serve God and that we derive our needs from the environment to achieve this goal. In this manner, we elevate ourselves even through such activities. The world itself is also elevated since it is then also helping man to serve God. In other words, by properly using the nourishment of this world in a way it's going to be helpful, even that act is an act of sanctifying the created world. So you can see that there's really no question from a halakhic basis, from a worldview basis. All of the great Jewish authorities agree that it's a requirement and it's a mitzvah to stay healthy. And not only is it a mitzvah, it is a foundational mitzvah. It's a foundational requirement. And you know, it's foundational to the Torah, not just for Jewish people. I know we're quoting a bunch of halakhic material that's really directed toward Jews, but it's foundational also for Gentiles who are also created in God's image and also were put on this earth with a body in order to fulfill the Torah, that is entrusted to them. So whether you're Jewish or not, if you keep Shabbat, let's say you refrain from all 39 malachot, and you're careful not to eat the slightest hint of non-kosher food, and you're very, very strict, and you only eat glatt kosher, but if you don't take care of your body, then really you shouldn't see yourself as someone who has arrived as fully Torah observant. Because staying healthy is not just an extra thing. It's not icing on the cake of Torah observance. I mean, I think you've already had enough cake anyway. You know what I mean. But health is an important thing, and not only that, it's under our control. So we can affect our health. We can protect our health. I mean, really, it's important for us to do that. God decided when you would be born, where you would be born, who your parents would be, and what your body would be like. And not everyone was born healthy. Some people were born with sicknesses and diseases and things like that, God forbid. But if you were born with a healthy body, you owe a debt of gratitude to God for that. I mean, think about it. It's a gift. And when someone gives you a gift and you misuse that gift and you don't use it to its full potential, it's kind of insulting to the person who gave it to you. But we're born if we're born with a healthy body, we have to give thanks to God and then do everything in our power to take care of it and to fulfill what He entrusted it to us for. So, you know, in this day and age, in the country that we live in the time that we live in, we have more power to take care of our health than any other people in history. And the reality is our bodies wear out. Eventually they die. That's just something that we all know is going to happen. But you can extend your life. You can make your life better. You can make your life more productive by taking care of it. It is within your grasp to do that. It's not beyond you. Now, the way that we approach health in Judaism and Messianic Judaism is not like the way that the world approaches health. I mean, the world approaches health in a very idolatrous manner. I mean, sometimes it's about obsession with appearances. It's about materialism. It's about the worship of youth, and it's about the worship of beauty. You know, there are people whose whole life is focused on health. It can be an end in itself. That's their focus in life is health. And it's almost like an attempt to achieve immortality. But the reality is they live their whole healthful life and then they die. Because everybody dies. Their body wears down. So it's kind of sad, really, if that's all your life is about and then it ends. But for us, it's a means to an end. Our life and our health is there to enable us to do the commandments. And so it's important to us, but it's not the end goal. And the reality is in this world that health is a business, and there's a lot of money changing hands regarding health, and all these get healthy quick cures and superfoods and all kinds of things that people use to entice people to spend money for fear of their health. And really, that's not what I'm talking about. Most of us, I think, know what is a healthy thing. I think about like when the rich young ruler came to Yeshua and said, what's the one weird trick that I can do to inherit the world to come? And Yeshua said, why are you asking me about something special like that? I mean, what does the Torah say? You already know what the Torah says. And it's the same thing with health. We're not looking for a secret trick that's going to make us healthy. We already know what it is. Let's not kid ourselves. If you exercise and you eat good food, you're going to be healthy. You know, that's all I'm talking about. I'm not talking about something beyond that. But really, health is a prerequisite for keeping Torah. You know, this is our worldview. It's not an end in itself. It's not a pursuit of its own. It's simply where we are. It's what we need in order to serve God. It's what we need to do in order to fulfill our real calling, which is to bring godliness into this world and to sanctify the physical world. So now the Torah itself has an interaction with our health. I mean, it's not like the Torah is a health book. And definitely the reason for the commandments is not so that we would be healthy, but God promises if it says in Exodus 15 that if you listen to the commandments of God, you do what's right, then all the diseases that I put upon the Egyptians, I won't put upon you. He says, for I am the Lord your healer. So there is blessing. You know, in Exodus 23, it says, you will serve the Lord your God. He will bless your bread and your water, and I will remove illness from within you. So while the Torah is not the reason, the health is not the reason for Torah, but instead we're following the commandments of God because this is what He said. At the same time, the Torah and health go hand in hand, and it makes sense because there's a connection between the Torah, the commandments of the Torah, and the body. Remember that verse out of Ecclesiastes 12:13 I quoted: "Fear God and keep His commandments." Well, there's a really interesting passage in Kli Yakar that talks about this. So you have there's two different categories of commandments in the Torah. There's positive commandments and there's negative commandments, right? So the rabbis have enumerated that there's a total of 613. 248 of them are positive commandments, So those are the commandments that are, you shall do such and such. And then there's 365 that are negative commandments. So you shall not do such and such. And so the commentator Clelia Carr sees the positive commandments and the negative commandments expressed in that passage of in Ecclesiastes. It says, fear God. Well, that's abstaining from doing what's forbidden. So that's the negative commandments. And then it says, and keep his commandments. So that would be the doing of the commandments. That would be the positive ones. So fear God, negative commandments, keep his commandments, his positive commandments. And then it says, for this is the entirety of man. Right? So interestingly, the rabbis have also enumerated that there are 248 body parts, and then there's 365 connections between those body parts. And I'm sure it's sort of arbitrary how they divide that up, but they see those positive commandments being like those body parts, and the negative commandments being like the connections between them. So, for this is the whole of man. Fear God, negative commandments, 365, and keep his commandments, the positive commandments, that's the 248, for this is the entirety of man, the number of his body parts and the connections. So there's a connection. That's all I'm saying. So there are three things that we can do. There are three things that we should do to protect our health, to fulfill this mitzvah in the proper way. Number one, give the body what it needs. So there's a special importance to the mitzvah of guarding your health. So provide your body with the things it needs to function. Provide it with enough sleep, provide it with enough exercise, provide it with enough food, provide it with enough drink, with the right kinds of food and drinks. And because it's maintaining and protecting the utensil that God gave us to do all the other mitzvot in the Torah. We have a physical body. It follows physical laws. It works as designed. Second thing we should do is avoid risky behaviors and avoid bad habits. So do things that are wise and acquire good habits. So don't do things that are destructive to your body. Don't subject your body to things that that you know are not good for it. But do things, start getting a pattern in your life, a schedule in your life, of good behaviors, good productive habits. And the third thing is that we should take medicine seriously. And I'm not saying not to be critical and ask questions, but there's a wealth of knowledge in this world that comes from God. You know, the profession of doctor is considered one of the highest, most important professions in the Jewish world. It's very, very well respected because a doctor is considered to be doing God's work. God is the healer, and he's the one who gives the doctors and physicians knowledge, the ability to do what they've done. And so as science begins to unlock cures, they're unlocking the cures that God created in this world. So we'd have to take the opinion of doctors very seriously and learn from the medical world about how to maintain our health and how to stay healthy. So the conclusion is, we're doing everything for the sake of heaven. We're doing everything not just to gratify ourselves. We're doing things for the sake of serving our Creator. Everything that you do, every decision that you make, every food that you eat, because your body is not your own. It's on loan to you. You might feel like, I have the right to do whatever I want with my body. You don't. It's not yours. Take care of it. So every deed, every act that we do, everything, when we're eating or drinking, working, everything, when we exercise, it should be seeking the kingdom. So may we see the kingdom come and fill our lives with blessing and abundance quickly and soon in our days.